A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 505. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Lost World. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a BBC One serial from 2001. Originally broadcast as two 75-minute episodes, also sometimes edited into a single 2-hour and 25-minute film version, which is what we've been looking at on the DVD. And it has an impressive cast led by Bob Hoskins and some impressive special effects that were very much state-of-the-art at the time, bringing Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's classic novel to British television. And of course, once again, bringing dinosaurs to British television.
We just love dinosaurs.
It seems so.
So last time we left Professor Challenger and his expedition having just made their way onto this Amazonian plateau, but they found themselves cut off. The way across the gorge has gone. They are stuck on the Lost World. The journey to get there was difficult enough, but even now they're going to be threatened by these ape creatures. They're going to be threatened by dinosaurs, big and small. And of course, they're a scientific expedition. They're trying to study these species. They're trying to learn more about them. But at the same time, they're also having to struggle how to survive and whether or not they're going to survive and return to tell the tale is somewhat of a challenge for the Challenger expedition.
Absolutely. And Professor Challenger is, of course, delighted to have been proven right that there are indeed dinosaurs on this plateau. And Professor Summerlee is exploring caves and cave paintings that he thinks may provide an escape route from the plateau. It turns out they can't leave it the same way they came in.
Yes, Professor Summerlee and his scientific endeavors hopefully will save today.
Yes, Summerlee being very uncomfortable there and always trying to find ways to leave. Meanwhile, Lord Roxton and Edward Malone seem to be competing for the romantic interest of Agnes Clooney.
Yes, indeed. There certainly seems to be a tension, although I'll spoil it slightly and say that Lord Roxton does become more interested and becomes a sort of accepted part of this tribe of indigenous people who live on the plateau of the Lost World and new discovery in their own right. And we get the impression that one of the reasons that Lord Roxton has been such a successful adventurer is because he gets on very well with local people and he doesn't have that sort of white colonial attitude towards them. He's very much interested in them and befriending them and learning their ways.
A little bit surprising given his ego.
Yes, absolutely, yes. But of course, without spoiling it anymore, we'll say that there are plenty of adventures still to survive in the Lost World and to see whether or not they will return. So let's talk a little bit about Lost Worlds and dinosaurs. Arthur Conan Doyle publishes his novel in 1912. I'm going to say, is this version seems to be set about then? It seems to be set period appropriate, Brian?
I think so. It looks like that's the intention. And the book was coming at the end of an era of there being lots of explorations and expeditions to these far-flung places carried out by the Victorians and Edwardians. And, you know, it was very much in a colonial context. And the idea that there were still unknown areas in the world that were in hidden places that had all sorts of mysterious things in them, that was sort of a very popular and exciting idea for people. And it was combining it with the fact that in the 19th century, they were starting to discover fossils of dinosaurs. And that was becoming a big thing as well.
Yes, I mean, the 19th century, the Victorians in particular, getting fascinated with dinosaurs, fascinated with lost areas or unexplored areas on the map. Some of that, of course, has got some slightly unpleasant context in terms of scrambles for colonization. But I mean, in this case, we've got this perhaps not unreasonable at the time idea that there might be monstrous creatures as yet undescribed still living in Africa or South America. And, you know, we've, as you say, Brian, we've been fascinated by dinosaurs ever since we first became aware of them. I looked at this idea that, you know, humans, how do you get a story of humans interacting with dinosaurs in fiction? And you and I think that Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth in 1864 might be the earliest fiction that we can find of this, but we're not sure entirely. There may be earlier examples which we'd be delighted for people to tell us about.
It's definitely quite early in terms of our knowledge and ideas of dinosaurs being something that existed. So yeah, definitely a very early one. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's novel may have been the best known English language novel with people interacting with dinosaurs until Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park came along in 1990, and then, of course, was adapted to the 1993 Steven Spielberg movie.
And, of course, Jurassic Park gives us all, you know, dinosaur mania again.
Yeah, it really sort of reignited that interest in the idea of humans and dinosaurs being there together.
Yeah. Now, I'm interested in comparisons between the book and this TV version, because Doyle's novel, I will say, does contain quite a bit about slavery. And in the book, Lord Roxton is notable for having helped end slavery in the Amazon, which, of course, is something that Roger Casement, who we talked about last time, was actually doing at this period. And in the book, I believe the expedition is sort of betrayed and cut off by vengeful slavers who are trying to get their revenge on Lord Roxton. That doesn't happen in this TV version. There is a different villain, but we won't say who. But there are some changes. And I said before, Professor Challenger also appears to be a slightly more brusque and difficult to get on with character in the book than he is when played by Bob Hoskins.
Yes, they did sort of update things in some respects for modern sensibilities while keeping it fairly faithful in other ways. And yeah, the idea of the slavery things, I think that was considered something that just, you know, was too far away from the main topic of the show. And they brought in a different sort of conflict that I think is more interesting and a more interesting challenge to modern viewers. And of course, the show came out really in the boom of dinosaur interest that was sparked by Jurassic Park and continued with Walking with Dinosaurs and then Primeval. So that was really right in there. And yeah, people always seem to love dinosaurs.
We can't get enough of them, Brian.
So it seems.
So it's time for our own thoughts about this BBC serial. Brian, how are you going to start us off in the positives column? What did you like about this show?
There was quite a bit that I liked in this. I will start by talking about the performances, because I think all of them were good, but seeing Bob Hoskins lead this was wonderful. I think he did a really nice job as Professor Challenger, and having Peter Falk in there, really interesting to see what he did, but I enjoyed all of these performances and what they did with those characters.
Yes, very much so. Everybody in this is doing great stuff, particularly, as you say, Bob Hoskins, James Fox, I think Elaine Cassidy's doing a great job as Agnes as well, giving us this modern adventurous woman.
Yeah, I think that was quite a nice take on it, sort of balancing the time it was set and the time that the TV production was made.
I guess Peter Falk, I think they only had him in New Zealand for a few days of shooting, but great to see him. It's an older Peter Falk. It's getting towards the end of his film and television career, but it's fabulous to have him in one of these shows and to actually get to watch him, Brian.
Yes, for sure. He was good in this.
We've got a big undertaking in terms of the production because it's a period piece. We've got lots of costumes, we've got lots of hair and makeup. We've got ape man suits. Even before we get to the dinosaurs and the creatures, there's quite a lot of moving parts in this production, Brian. What did you make of the sort of look and feel of the show?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. I thought this was very well done. And in addition to the things that you mentioned, we had all this location work, really extensive location work. And they took advantage of what they had in New Zealand, and it looked very good. And yeah, all of the production things with costuming and makeup looked very good. And then their creature effects, it was very reminiscent of what they did in Walking with Dinosaurs. And even coming back, you know, 25 years later, I still liked how it looked. So yeah, this was a show that really looked good.
Yeah, New Zealand looks great standing in for the Amazon. Amazing production values from the BBC, the costumes, hair and makeup, everything's great. And then, as I say, even without dinosaurs, you've got these ape creatures, ape men, you know, movement actors in the suits. What did you make of the ape creatures?
I thought they were not bad. They were not the most interesting part of this production, but they were realized in a reasonable way. What about you?
Oh, I liked them. I thought they were extremely well done. And although they have, you know, as you say, they're not the main part, main attraction, they had their subplot of their own, which I thought was rather good. And I like that. And it's quite touching in places as well. And it's nice to see that the expedition or the Challenger expedition were keen to sort of interact with the indigenous people and this indigenous ape species and try and learn from them rather than exploit them.
Yeah, good stuff for sure.
Then, of course, we've got the dinosaurs themselves. We've got a mixture of some models and animatronics and then the CGI. How are the dinosaurs, Brian?
I thought they look good. They look very good for the time it was made. You know, this was the group who knew how to do this, and it looked very good. Even looking back at it now, I think it looks fine and it's perfectly enjoyable. So yeah, impressive work if you can think that 25 years later.
Yeah, 25 years on, they look great. I like the model work probably a bit better because I always like practical stuff and the practical models being worked by various puppeteers and so on. But even the CGI ones look good. They're quite scary. Yeah, it's a rip-roaring, rollicking ride on the Lost World plateau with all these different moving parts going on. All quite enjoyable. As you say, it looks great. It sounds great. The music's good. You know, the dinosaurs' roars and so on are great. And everybody in it seems to be doing great stuff and having a good time at the same time.
I think the lighting between the live action things and the computer animation, that was matched up quite well. And that makes a big difference.
Yeah, true. Good point. Anything else in the positives before we move to a few negatives for us?
Let's go to negatives. What do you have to say?
Well, I'm only curious as to how they treated the indigenous people of the plateau and the ape creatures. They've obviously, as you say, Brian, they've sort of dropped the slavery subplot from the book and instead given us a more, what would we say, a more considered and less exploitative relationship with the local people, both the Riverside Mission and on the plateau. Did you find that? Did you think that was okay, the way they handled it?
This is a bit of a tough one to decide on. You know, in some ways, the way they portrayed the indigenous people was a little bit weird. It's hard to come up with something that works well for something like that. But they also portrayed them as basically being competent and decent people. So, you know, a little bit of mixed feelings there. It's sort of hard to say for me.
Right. It's an interesting feature. I think probably they were sensible to drop the slavery stuff from the book. It is interesting how the expedition interacts with the locals, both on the river and on the plateau. And I'm just going to say, shout out to those kayakers who put wigs on and flit those fiberglass log canoes in that river. I certainly wouldn't have done that, Brian. That looked extremely dangerous.
Yeah. Specialists, stunt performers can do some remarkable things. So yeah, always interesting to see something like that.
Out of the performances, I noted that Matthew Rhys is a sort of the romantic lead. He's a young actor. I think perhaps when he's up against Bob Hoskins, James Fox, and Peter Falk, it's a little bit of a struggle perhaps for him.
Yeah, I don't know that he was sort of given enough to do to be able to stand up against some of the other characters. It's a fairly simple kind of thing as written for that character, too. You know, he's the honest journalist and the romantic character with the little triangle with the two love interests. And yeah, it's all right. Not as interesting as the other characters, but for me, you know, was okay.
Okay. Anything else to mention in the negatives before we get to our recommendations?
I think the character who was sort of his girl at home, I think, was also sort of not that interesting. She doesn't have that much screen time. But yeah, that sort of plot line of I don't know if they needed it, but it wasn't a huge part of things.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yes, it's a slightly less interesting subplot. Does get resolved at the end, we find out. But yeah, perhaps didn't need that as well. But yeah, okay, it was a pretty good production. I think we liked it throughout.
I think so. So, it sounds like we're getting towards recommendation time. Would you like to start on this one, Eamon?
I'll go first on this one and say that I am going to recommend The Lost World from 2001. If you can track down the DVD, it is slightly expensive, and I would guess that stock is running out, so you need to get on it quick. But I am going to recommend it. I had a great time with it. I thought it was terrific. I'm slightly surprised that it's not available to stream that I can find anywhere here in the UK. Certainly, if it does turn up on streaming in the future, it's a definite thumbs up from me. What about yourself, Brian? What did you make of it?
I will recommend this as well. It's great fun and has some really solid performances and some lovely visuals in there. So yeah, this was good fun and I recommend it.
Splendid stuff. If you've seen The Lost World or if you watch it after listening to our recommendation, do get in touch and let us know what you thought.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Lost World introduced us to Professor Challenger, this scientist and adventurer in the early 20th century who has, it seems, discovered this lost world where prehistoric creatures like dinosaurs are still roaming the earth. And he recruits a variety of people and some funding to go on a new expedition, and they travel to this plateau where they see these dinosaurs and all sorts of creatures, and we have a variety of confrontations related to what they think of these things, and also with these ape creatures and with other people, and end up with all sorts of involved things and lots of good visuals involving dinosaurs and more.
Great excitement on The Lost World and with all those dinosaurs.
Absolutely.
And please come back and join us next time. We've got another classic novel, a children's novel this time. It's a 2006 BBC version of Kenneth Graham's The Wind in the Willows. A beautiful looking and interesting cast production for us to talk about next time.
Yes, another classic there. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, going right back to the beginning. And you can search for British Invaders on Facebook and find our group there to join in on some of the conversations. And you can also follow us on Threads and on Instagram. We are at British_invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, please find us on the socials and get involved in the chat. Let us know what you think. And please find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you'll find at vognetwork.com. The Voice of Geeks for podcasts, for gaming, for Twitch streaming, for all sorts of geek-related content. Find us at vognetwork.com and tell them Brian and Eamon said hello.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, and just one more thing, dinosaurs!